Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm a journalist based out in Reykjavik, Iceland, where we're in deep winter right now. It's minus six. I know that's not as bad as it is in some places out in the US and elsewhere. It's pretty damn cold outside. Good time to play some games, and I've been doing a lot of that. I've been really enjoying the New Year sales and the Christmas sales. I've picked up a whole bunch of new games. I've been playing some Spiritfarer, been playing some Plague Tale Innocent, been playing a bit of Yoshi's Crafted World and a bit of Mario 3D All-Stars. I'm really having a great time. Happy New Year to everyone that's listening, and thank you for joining me. As you might have heard if you're a regular listener, I've done a couple of Game of the Year episodes with interesting guests. First was Kieran Daly from the Radical Art Review, who picked a bunch of interesting games. Then we had Louis from Time Played 3HR, great podcast about games, and he picked a bunch of fascinating indie games that I'm going to play this year. And this episode, I have a third guest, just to finish off that Game of the Year coverage. I thought I'd go with someone that comes with a slightly different angle on games that is really interesting and fun. Dani, aka Girl with Box. She's a streamer that I really enjoy watching, and she's been on the podcast before to talk about The Last of Us Part 2 earlier in the year. So Dani's going to join us and fill us in on all of the great games that she's played in 2020. But before we get to that, I will just mention that this show has a Patreon. So whether you're a regular listener who enjoys the show every week, or a new listener that's just with us for the first time and you like what you hear, you can pop over to patreon.com/gamingin the wild if you'd like to support the show from as little as $1 a month. And for that, you'll get extra episodes, off-topic chats, interviews, you'll get weekly sale recommendations for the Switch and the PlayStation 4, and an invite to our cozy little Discord community where a bunch of nice people chat about what they're playing. So if you're interested in supporting the show, it means a lot to me. It helps give me some drive to keep going forward, to know that people appreciate the show. And the dollars do add up and help me to improve my equipment and make the show sound better. If that sounds like something you're interested in, it's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. I do also have a Ko-fi account, like ko-fi.com. And I would like to mention, actually, that I have one mystery Ko-fi supporter who maxed out my goal there to buy a new mic stand for streaming and for the podcast. And so whoever that was, I would like to give a big heartfelt thank you for supporting the show. It really made my day. I'm going to go out and get myself that mic stand soon, and it's really going to help me out with making the show and with streaming without getting an awful bad back from doing it. So thank you to my Ko-fi supporter. If that's your preferred creator platform, you can find me at ko-fi.com/gamingin the wilds. And with that out of the way, let's move on to today's chat with Girl with Box. That's coming right up. Okay, so today's guest is Gaming in the Wild's first ever guest and Gaming in the Wild's first ever returning guest. It's Dani, Go with Box. Hello, Dani.
Hello. Thank you for having me again. Happy to be here.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. Happy New Year to you. How was your holiday time?
Oh my gosh, it was great to have time off, but it was kind of busy. I was. I'm sorry. If you hear that sound in the background, that is Monsieur, who we so rudely forgot to introduce.
That's yeah, a dog right. I'm fostering. So the big event of your Christmas is the arrival of Dog with Box.
Yes, yeah. And
did you say Muncie? So
yes, I call him Muncie, but his full name is Monsieur. He's a French gentleman.
Fancy.
Oh yes, mixed breed. So you know, I don't have information there, but
yeah. I saw one picture and the dog looks like quite a muscular type of dude.
Yeah. I think maybe pit bull boxer mix. Mm-hmm. It's very sweet.
But, very sweet and massive, kind of.
Yes. Loves to play. So he's playing in the background and he's gonna ask me to play with him, and I'm gonna do my best to ignore him so we can record this.
Okay. You might have to take a little break for some local co-op.
Yeah.
Local co-op play with Muncie. Okay, so this is the third of the three Game of the Year episodes that we're going to do. I did one with Kieran from Radical Art Review, one with Louis from Time Played 3HR, and one with Danny today. And we've decided to have a mixture of like new games that came out in 2020 and games that you just enjoyed in the last year.
Yeah. So when I was thinking about this list, I guess, you know, one thing is that I'm really not a good gamer. So I'm not keeping up to date on the latest games, really. But for this year in particular, the games that I played, what was more important to me was, you know, being able to feel some sense of community with my friends. So most of these games are really about that. Just the things that helped me in quarantine, really, is the list.
Right. And I think that you are maybe the person from the three that is the most online and the most kind of on Twitch specifically as well. So I guess, did that affect like your choices? Are there games that you enjoyed streaming and multiplayering and stuff like that?
Oh, that's a good question. Honestly, not as much as I initially expected it would. I did do some multiplayer of one of the games, which is a very popular game. So, you know, I'm sure if you're at this part, you'll be able to guess before it even comes up. But yeah, it didn't affect it as much. Some of them I heard about from Twitch, from other streamers on Twitch, but yes, a lot of these games was just what held me over meanwhile on Zoom calls with my friends and with my roommates here in the apartment. So
right, it was the year of video games keeping us sane.
Yeah, honestly.
Okay, so we'll start with number five and work our way up to your sort of loosely your game of the year or your actual favorite.
Yeah. So my number five is going to be Animal Crossing. Came out in March, right as we were on lockdown, and immediately got sucked in. The franchise. I guess I haven't played all of the games in the franchise, but I had the GameCube version when I was growing up, so I do have some nostalgia for the franchise.
Mm-hmm. Which one was that? Was that like New Leaf or New... what was it again?
I might be wrong about this. I think the first one was just called Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, right. It's right back on GameCube.
Yeah.
The only one that I played from this series is a little bit of New Leaf on a 3DS.
Yeah.
And just did 20 minutes and got like a table in my house and I was like, okay.
And then you're like, okay, that's it.
But seeing this one go off online, like I felt a little left out because everyone was playing it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I knew that I'm not a natural Animal Crossing fan.
Yeah.
But it was lovely to see the people kind of bonding over it. It was really nice to see.
Yeah, I think there was just something about the time that it came out was almost perfect from Nintendo's side, because it just provided this sort of wholesome outlet when we were in really, really dark and uncertain point in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So... and for me, it definitely satisfied an itch to shop. That was the thing I did most on the game, is just making sure I could buy clothes, and I went to my friends' islands, and you know, we'd have little fashion shows, and so easily was one of the favorites from this year. I played over 200 hours in
Oh my god.
Yeah, in the first in the first month, it was, I was very much sucked in.
In the first month? I thought you meant like all year.
No. That was the first month. I was comparing that to time I'd spent playing Breath of the Wild. That was another time suck when that just came out. And Breath of the Wild, when it came out, what was that, 2019? Or was that the year before?
I'm forgetting. I think it was 2017 even.
17, oh.
Switch launch game, right?
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, my God.
I could be wrong on that. I think it is, but I could be wrong on that.
Oh, so that makes it even worse because my time in Breath of the Wild is 250 hours. And immediately Animal Crossing was on track to surpass that. So I think that says something, definitely.
Right. And how long did you keep signing in and checking on all your villagers and keeping on with it?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I did fall off of the game, like I think so many people that I know who played it. So, but I was steadily checking in at least up until June. I think Nintendo suffers from a lack of a good UI or a good UX for their online experience. And that was really, you know, what was more fun to me about the game in that time.
They're like the most paranoid. I guess they position themselves as the family games company.
Yeah.
Right. And so they've tried to keep down online communication and kind of keep like baby gates on everything. Like,
yeah, it's interesting because I remember a discussion about them wanting to move away from that and kind of market Nintendo as a more serious console. So that's when they started getting titles like they acquired Bayonetta, and Devil May Cry series is now on Nintendo, but still, yeah, like you said, they do have some baby gates on their online experience. So it's kind of strange, but
yeah, I mean, even adding people with this 16-digit code or whatever it is, or like a 12-digit code, it's kind of nuts when you can just kind of, everyone has usernames that you can just remember and stuff. It's like they go to great lengths to make you not findable through the Switch. But yeah, so do you still check in on your village? Is it a ghost town, and has everyone left, and is there weeds everywhere? That would be my nightmare. You make this carefully manicured village, and then you pop in. And like no one is there.
Well, so they got rid of the feature that allowed villagers to leave without your permission.
without saying goodbye.
Yeah. So I actually checked in very recently because I wanted to see what the update looked like with the new season. And I had some villagers asked to leave and I swiftly denied their request. Even if I'm not playing, they will have to stay there until I get back to them.
Just sitting there by the window, looking out, waiting for your arrival.
I can't let go of Flora. You know, that's my best friend in the game. So,
a good one. And I noticed that this one, I mean, I don't know about you, but I follow go-to lists. Like, I follow lots of them. I absolutely love lists and absolutely love ranking stuff. And I love kind of retrospectives of music and games and stuff. So I kind of looked at a lot of lists this year. And like Animal Crossing seemed like the pick for the lowest on the scale, if you know what I mean. Like, a lot of people had it as their 10. A lot of magazines had it as their 10. It's like they kind of, they wanted to acknowledge how important it was. Keep it, it's like it just scrapes in there because of how important it was. Because like you said, I think a lot of people feel that it's a little clunky in some ways and kind of could have been developed a lot more, but it just really hit that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it really came in at a good time to provide people with some comfort. But yeah, the longevity, just given some design decisions, it wasn't there.
Okay, Animal Crossing number 5. Writing it down. Hit me.
Yeah, I'll hit you. The next one on my list is Just Dance.
Okay.
Yes. No.
Yeah, I saw that you've been streaming a bit of this one.
Yeah, I tried doing a Just Dance stream. I mean, I live in New York. I really do not have the space that one would need for a true Just Dance experience. But it was, again, my level of investment in the game was very much a product of being stuck inside all the time. And dancing is a big hobby of mine. It used to be more of a hobby of mine. And I found that this game was a really nice reintroduction to it. I used to go to dance classes in the city. And now that I can't do that, that provides a good proxy for me. And it was great to play with my roommates because they only have a local co-op. I wish they'd have an online multiplayer. That would be amazing. But yeah, and then on top of that, got introduced to some great songs through playing the game. And now I can dance a little bit better. So
I have never played this one, so I don't know what it entails.
Yeah, okay. So I have the Switch version, which in some regards, I guess, is a little pared down in terms of how you score for a song. But they are, you're using the Joy-Con. You have one Joy-Con in your right hand, and you have an instructor on the screen. You can see in the bottom right corner when the song is playing, the moves that you're going to have to hit in sequence, and you're just trying to copy that. I have to say that little preview into the moves is so it's so arbitrary. It does not work for me. It's how I play it. You have to be bad at the song once and then try again and hopefully remember more of the steps, but it still is fun. And I say the Switch is more of a pared down version just because it only tracks your movements through the Joy-Con. So if you want to be lazy, you know, you can just sit down and make sure your hand is moving in the right way and you'll still score pretty well.
So what's on the screen? Have you got your little instructor guy in the corner? What are you actually kind of watching while you do the
So you have a tiny instructor in the corner, and then you have this, I shouldn't say instructor, let's say it's like a stick figure that's in the corner, and it's kind of showing a still of the movement, which is why it's kind of hard to pick up on what you're actually going to be doing until you see the instructor, which is on the full screen, they're doing the dance in real time.
Yeah, so it's like a kind of warning of what's about to happen.
But it's not a good warning. Even so, it's fun. It's and it's a good way to get moving too, which desperately needed after months of playing Animal Crossing on the couch.
Absolutely. I was trying to get a hold of a Ring Fit Adventure at the start of quarantine.
Yes.
But it had sold out in Iceland and just stayed sold out until I think it's still sold out. So I put it on my Amazon wish list and my parents got me one for Christmas and I'm yet to try it, but it's just sitting there in its box unopened, stood up in all of its glory, like taunting me to come and get some exercise and play a game and stop being a potato.
Please let me know when you do play it, because I have it and I think, you know, if I didn't put Just Dance on this list, that would have made the list. But I did Just Dance more. I sprained my ankle really badly last Christmas, 2019 Christmas. And my mom was visiting, so she's very into fitness. And I got that so that she could play it. And I could maybe do some of the things and, like, work up to being able to actually move again. So I got it right before it started selling out in quarantine. Mm-hmm. I feel lucky about that. But have I been consistent? Absolutely not.
Right. I keep thinking it's going to be like VR for me because I have PSVR. And whenever I want to play it, I have to kind of reorganize the room kind of and push the TV far away and make all this space and kind of, so I'm guessing Ring Fit's going to be a bit like that, like trying not to kick over the TV and have enough space to actually be Ring Fit.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on what you do. You know, you can do the individual exercises or you could do the main adventure game. So I think that depends. Some days while I'm working, I'll turn it on and just do like reps with the what is it called, with the ring. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do like your bicep pushes and pulls.
Right. Okay.
So and it counts that even without turning on the switch. So you know, there are options there.
Yeah. Yeah, 2021 goals is to get Ring Fit in my house. Yeah. We're not on a big lockdown here, but I don't know. We're not on a big lockdown, but it still feels like people are staying home a lot and like all of our bars and shops are still, you know, pretty minimal hours and stuff. So yeah, it's on the list. Okay, so far, so quarantine.
the next one is definitely more of a Twitch influence here. Fall Guys.
Okay.
We remember the Fall Guys portion of quarantine, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've never played it. I've downloaded it, but never played it because I've watched you play it. And and like the kinda,
and you were not ready for the experience.
I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm ready. I don't know if I'm ready for all these toxic beans.
Oh my God, I have never been so angry at such a cute looking game. It was so frustrating. But it was I don't know what to call it. It was almost the way it sort of took over Twitch at the height of its popularity was pretty insane. So I definitely had to try it, and I did enjoy my time playing it, you know, even despite the frustrations. I also enjoyed watching Curls Burgers play it because he was
the master.
Yeah, he was actually getting crowns. Meanwhile,
he's like an Olympic player.
right. Meanwhile, I have 3 crowns to my name to this day. So
that's pretty good. It's pretty good. You got the 3 crowns.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Yeah, you know.
I saw some people on Twitter who said that they'd played 50 rounds and still waiting for one. I'm like, I will get a crown one day. You know?
It took forever.
3 seems fine.
I had victory stolen from me multiple times. But yeah, it was very fun. It was very fun to play. And got
what was
play.
Your favorite event in Fall Guys?
Ooh, okay. So I want to say Hexagon. The Hexagon round is up there with the falling tiles.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But that is also one of the most stressful rounds.
It's stressful to watch, man. It's like all these people tippy tapping and stealing each other's square.
Oh, I mean. I guess I put it up there because just compared to those more final rounds, it seemed to be the only thing I was kind of good at. I was able to get the hang of it more than some others, so that one was up there.
Yeah. I think the most fun one to watch was maybe there was one with like loads of fruit coming down.
Ugh. No.
Maybe the ones that were fun to watch weren't the ones that were fun to play.
No.
Because you sound like you're having like a trauma flashback. To
yeah,
Fall Guys.
I am.
And also the team games are fun to watch because of player frustration, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was horrendous. I don't know how else to put that. Because even when you're doing well, you just end up being at the mercy of your team's skill, and that's hard. Anything that had to do with tail grabbing too was awful for me because
that
for
was
some
good
reason
to watch.
I just, yeah. I mean, I couldn't. I thought I was grabbing people, but apparently I wasn't. I don't know. Ugh.
That was a good one to watch too. When someone has the tail and they have it for the whole thing, and there's like the clock's counting down, and like 3 seconds before the end,
yeah,
there's like a little tail grab fest, and it's like three different people.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's a really really fun game, even through the stress.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to stick to being a viewer of Fall Guys. I don't know. I still don't know if I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
you know, my taste, I'm like, I'm happier being Ellie, like, horse riding through zombie Seattle than having to tail grab with a bunch of internet gamers.
It's a different type of stress. It's a different type, yeah, of stress for sure.
Yeah. Right.
And then after that came Among Us.
Mm-hmm.
The Among Us phase. So.
Right.
Similarly, that took over the conversation on Twitch really quickly. Mm-hmm. Even though that isn't a game from this year.
Right, which I was surprised to hear. Mm-hmm. It's like this kind of underdog story, I guess, if it's an old game that kind of they stuck with and improved and then it managed to break through. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And now they're even working on even more features for the game.
I'm not sure that I entirely get Among Us, you know. I've watched a little bit. I watched, like, the AOC one.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like... So it's multiplayer. And how many people? Is there, like, 6 people or something?
It can be up to 10 people.
Up to 10?
Yeah.
And then are you always playing on a voice chat with the other people in the game?
Yes. So there's no in-game voice chat. So usually my friends and I will talk through Discord. I don't like going into public lobbies so much because, I don't know, you never know what kind of person you're going to be playing with. I think a lot of people go into the public lobbies just to troll and throw games. And it's not as fun if you're not, you know, yelling at someone over Discord in real time, accusing them.
So is it best when it's like a bunch of people that you know? And you're all on a voice chat together. Is that how it's, like, best played?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've definitely met a lot of people playing this game. I will know maybe one person and get invited to their lobby and meet their friends. I think it's interesting. I've heard people sort of be off-put by the idea of lying. I know that just doesn't feel good to some people. And
right,
definitely
it's the game of deception, isn't it?
Yeah, like, yeah. And I've heard of things getting out of hand with accusations and actual feelings being hurt. So, you know, I think to some extent it is good when you know the people that you're playing with because you know how you can speak to them and not risk offending them.
Wow, I haven't heard about that. I hadn't heard about, like, it getting real.
Yeah, it's it's unfortunate. Because I'm definitely the kind of person, you know, I'll play up the theatrics of it and pretend to be really upset and but in reality that's just me having fun with the game. And so far, at least I don't think I've hurt anyone's feelings, so I'm happy about that. But I can see how someone might not be entirely sure if you're not close to them, whether or not you're being intentionally hurtful.
So is this like if you get accused by someone, then you have to feign innocence and, like, vague outrage? Is that what's going on?
Well, I do. I personally do.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though it's like one person is definitely like a randomly anointed murderer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one or two people.
So there's methods of playing, basically. You can play it straight or you can go in deeper.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all a mind game. Well, I think it's very, very fun, you know, if you can get past the deception part and just let yourself just realize that it is a game, then it's very fun to really get into and try not to get caught, you know.
Yeah.
I get to yell at my friends and say, you know, I saw you vent, when in reality I'm the imposter all along. And I've been throwing everyone off my scent.
Would you describe yourself as a clean player of Among Us? It sounds like you've got some tricks.
I mean, can we really call it tricks? It's part of the game. No, I try to play a clean game, you know, just kill when I have to, and I lie when I have to. So
just getting it done.
Just getting it done. It's all part of the job.
It's all part of the murderous space station.
Yeah.
A bloodbath.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some great moments to just come out of that game. In my own experience of playing it, and it's also been so fun to watch other streamers playing it, and see the enjoyment they get from it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's absolutely up there on my list for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the list of someone who really did like lean on gaming in mm-hmm. in the quarantine.
Yeah, yeah.
For like social contact, I guess. Yeah. I guess like living out here in Reykjavik, like we never were on like a kind of crazy high alert like mm-hmm. other countries have been. And I can't imagine living in a big city through all this. Like Reykjavik is it's a city, but it's also like a village, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not like living in the East End of London or living in, you know, like a big packed sort of metropolitan real city with so many people around. So I guess like we've been able to have quite a kind of a quiet time of this whole thing. I felt quite lucky to be where I am, but I can totally see how if you're in like a little apartment in a big city, these games would really be a lifesaver socially and with exercise and routine.
Yeah. So I think in that regard, it's a really important time for gaming, almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been a good way to bring people together. But mm-hmm. given just online functionality, it really helps in times when you have to be away from people. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way to get to know people, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I guess that's how I know you and how I know Curls and like a lot of our little Twitter, you know, loose Twitter group.
Yeah. Yeah. So very happy about that.
So that's your number two. Mm-hmm. We've rocketed through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is time for your number one game of the year.
My number one game of the year. Can we get a drum roll? I promise you it's not surprising. The Last of Us 2.
Okay. Yeah, my second placing game of the year.
Yeah.
This is a really interesting one. You know, it's mm-hmm. been like divisive. A lot of people placing it number one, a lot of people not placing it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't understate how impactful the game, or I shouldn't say impactful, how lasting the impression the game made on mm-hmm. me has been.
We did a long spoiler cast about it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we even had to just have a sort of a therapeutic session to get over what happened in the game. If I talk about it in context of other AAA games that came out this year, although I will preface that by saying I didn't play many. Let's see, I did try to play, despite all of the drama surrounding the release, I tried to play Cyberpunk for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just immediately so bored. not everybody was talking about all the bugs that the game had, but I wasn't drawn in by the story at all.
Right.
It seemed
right. I kind of feel the same about that as a non-player of Cyberpunk, kind of watching the hype escalate and I don't know, seeing trailers and seeing like more footage coming out.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I don't know what's in this game for me. It's like this kind of crude sort of humor and like, I don't know, kind of sleazy vibe. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Right. Is, you know.
I don't quite understand what it is.
Yeah, I'll say I got it because or it looked interesting to me. Again, we are removing the factor of the delays and the crunch and
just the
transphobic sort of issues around the company, but just the game itself, the cyberpunk aesthetic is appealing to me in a very surface level way. I'm not one that really has delved into other games of that genre or movies of that genre too much. But it is aesthetically pleasing to me.
Yeah, same. I'm a big sci-fi fan for sure. And I kind of just consider cyberpunk to be like a kind of just a subgenre of that, basically, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I played an hour or two of it, and so far it just feels like this could have been marketed as a GTA reskin.
Right. Wow, harsh.
I mean, I don't mean to be harsh, but I've seen other people word this better, but it wasn't doing anything with that environment that's unique to that environment, really. They had this whole idea of prosthetics and like digital prosthetics and whatnot and selling how bodies have been commoditized by corporations, but at the end of the day you are just like running around and fighting people, and I don't know, it doesn't seem super, there was nothing that drew me into that,
right?
As opposed to The Last of Us, which you know, the first game immediately hooked, first 10 minutes of the first game hooked. And same for the second one, following up on the previous story. I mean, I was already invested, but they do an amazing job at storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, very cinematic style that they have. It's really,
like
the narrative drives everything, right?
Yeah.
And I guess it's never really full open world. So it's not like, you know, in Cyberpunk with all of that freedom to drive around, cause trouble, getting scrapes and kind of checkbox maps and stuff. It's not narrative driven in the same way, whereas Last of Us 2 is like going along for a ride through this kind of cinematic world.
Maybe it's not a good comparison, the open world versus a narrative driven game, but even with more narrative driven games, I haven't experienced the same level of interest in a story.
So what's your, like, looking back on it now, we've had, what, 6 months or so since it was Last of Us 2 time. And I guess sounds like it has stuck with you. You're still thinking about it. Have you kind of...
Oh, yeah. Well, I also am trying to get my boyfriend to play the first game. Yeah, we got to do a little bit of that the last weekend, and that made me want to replay the second game. Maybe both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another game that I enjoyed watching you stream, actually, because I played the first one and was a little, I don't know, I wanted to play the second one, but yeah, big expensive game, blah, I don't know. So I watched you play a little bit of it, and kind of coming along for the ride on that really, really sold me on the game. Just the quality of it. It's interesting. I've always found it interesting that you shared that journey through streaming it.
I mean, we talked about that a bit last time. Yeah, I will let you know when I do play it again. It is a when, not an if. Mm-hmm. when I do play it again, if the experience is a bit different, but mm-hmm. And I mean, it had its fair share of issues with the launch. Also, there was the leak of a major event in the story. And mm-hmm. the fact that it still didn't water down the story at all or the gameplay mm-hmm. at all is a really commendable, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't pull any punches with that plot.
Honestly.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this because I've been flagging up Kentucky Route Zero as my game of the year on mm-hmm. previous podcasts and kind of talking about it with people. And the thing that I love most about that game is mm-hmm. a little bit in common with Last of Us 2. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly different games, like Kentucky Route Zero, minimalist, stylized, cel-shaded, mm. not that kind of beautiful, verdant open world or that kind of fully realized, fleshed out kind of apocalypse visually. But what they both do is the stories aren't video game stories.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a kind of find the sword and save the whatever, and it's not kind of collectathons, sort of crystals and whatever. It's, I don't know, they're advanced level stories with big yeah. questions and with dark kind of content to them and mm-hmm. like a weight of seriousness to them both.
Yeah.
Like Kentucky Route yeah. Zero in One Direction as a kind of a full-on art game that contains, you know, all these thoughts about working class America, where people fit mm. in, how does one be an artist, and what is corporations doing to the US? Mm-hmm. And like Kentucky Route Zero asks all of these weighty questions about identity and self and culture and community and society. Mm-hmm. And then Last of Us 2, we have this more personality-driven, more traditionally gamey. You know, mm-hmm. it's got violence, it's got collectibles, it's got some of those game things you expect to find. But at the same time, the story is more like it could be an art movie or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like big themes.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly it. The philosophical questions that they're asking, and then, I mean, the very thing that really split up the perception that people had of the game was that divisive ending, mm-hmm. right? That the Last of Us 2 had. Mm-hmm. But that was also the thing that I really liked about it, you know? Mm-hmm. It, much like in life, there are no neat answers to these types of questions, and mm-hmm. and the actions that people will take in certain situations. So I didn't really enjoy that and appreciate that about the game. So it does stand out to me in that regard as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a very different proposition from most games.
Yeah, yeah.
A very different kind of just emotional awareness in the writing and mm-hmm. a conceptual kind of tightness in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear they've thought through every, you know, every aspect of it.
Yeah.
For better or worse, they've taken it to the end of the roads.
Yeah.
Do you still hate Abby with a burning passion? 6 months on.
It doesn't burn as much. It doesn't burn as uh-huh. much. We're not on friendly terms yet, though.
mm-hmm. I'm interested for your second playthrough to see if how your attitude to Abby is, having kind of known the story in advance and to yeah. kind of to come face to face with her again.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'm interested to see it too.
mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Good list. There's a real
thank you.
Yeah, it's like four kind of fun multiplayer, very online, colorful
mm-hmm.
beans and murders and dancing, and building little houses, and then boom, like Last of Us.
True.
The kind of monolith number one.
yeah. Yeah, there are two bean related games here, which is a lot for a list of five.
Right. themes themes of 2020. Bean games.
Bean games. Bean games, and then just serious philosophical dilemma. Those are my genres.
It's a good split. But you've also got some honorable mentions, am I right?
Yeah, I wanted to give an honorable mention to Going Under, which is a roguelike game, but you are an intern at a company, and you've been tasked to fight monsters in their dungeon to unknowingly aid this evil CEO in their plans. So it's a very fun play, but it's really colorful. I really love the art style. That drew me in a lot also.
Right, I was really on the fence with that one because it's not my genre.
Yeah.
Like this kind of roguelike arena combat, loop-based game, I guess, with a kind of slightly arcadey feel. I always feel like roguelikes, it's like the kind of home console equivalent of kind of pumping in quarters, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Like just one more go, just one more go. How far can I get this time?
Yes, I know exactly that.
But I've seen a bit of that going on Twitch as well, and I loved the art style of it, and it just seemed so kind of funny and knowing with the humor.
Yes, yeah. And then I guess also working in tech, that, you know, it hit a little bit differently.
Yeah, seems like a good one. I might, if it's on deep sale sometime, I might well pick that one up and have a little spin.
Yeah, definitely. Ooblets, another very cute game I've been playing this year, which is not fully released. So maybe, you know, we'll talk again next year and see if it makes my end of year list.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of this one on Early Access. I think Chloe was streaming it.
Yes, yeah. The original Ooblets influencer, yes.
Yeah, it seems like a really fun one. Like it's like first person, colorful. I'm not exactly sure what goes on in that game. I watched Chloe play it for like an hour, and she was running around kind of grabbing little blobs and kind of having a great time. And I'm not sure what that game is, but it does look like she was having a lot of fun.
It's like a mix of a farming simulator and Pokemon, just because you're farming these little creatures, and you fight other little creatures with your homegrown little creatures, but the fights are actually dance battles. So
yeah,
It's adorable.
Sounds like a happy game.
Yeah, it's really adorable.
That sounds like the kind of game you need to play after Last of Us Part 2.
Yes, and I did for a long time. So I'm excited to see what it's like on full release.
Right. Yeah, I didn't even clock that it hadn't come out on the consoles yet. Is it still just like a Steam access situation?
It's on, I believe, Steam and Xbox. Xbox is where I play.
Right.
But it's in alpha. So some things are broken, but I mean, if you were to play it, you'd be surprised because they have made it such a smooth experience so far. And I think it's just two developers working on the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hadn't encountered a lot of bugs or anything. So it's really impressive.
Yeah. One to watch.
Oh, definitely. Just a couple of more. Control, which is not a game from 2020, but a game I was playing in 2020.
Right. I think a lot of people were, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They had a DLC update, I think.
So. Yeah, I played the first DLC of it. What's it called again? It's not the Alan Wake related one. It's the other one. The Foundation.
Ah, yeah.
Super cool. I played this game this year as well. loved it. It's the reason I bought a PS4.
Yeah, yeah. I still, you know, my shameful secret is that I still have not beat it. Mm-hmm. But it's still very fun.
Where are you up to? Where are you up to in Jesse's adventure?
Let's see. I just got stuck looking for. I don't remember what exactly I was doing.
Were you searching for your brother? Was it that part of the game?
Yeah. I hadn't gotten up to that. I met someone new. And I was searching for something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. See, I'm a bad gamer. I should know this.
Nah, it's easy to fall off a game and lose track.
Yeah.
Yeah, Control. I found Control to be a really difficult game, honestly. Some people didn't. Some people I know have played through it and wished it was harder because they are insane or geniuses or insane geniuses. But to me, it was just a super tough game. And I really had to power through it. Mm-hmm. But having come back to it with the DLC, they've added difficulty options, which is incredible. So when I went into the DLC, I just took down the damage Jessie takes a little bit and put up the damage she takes a little bit and her reload time. And suddenly it's a game that I can just enjoy rather than feeling like I'm trudging through mud, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I haven't tried the DLC yet, but I do remember the first few battles that I played of the game. One, I was just terrified because I had no idea what was going to happen in the game. It's not a horror game, like a traditional horror game,
but it was psychological horror.
Yeah, it was very creepy. So it had me on edge a lot of
that
the time.
The chant from the hiss just freaks me out.
Yes, yes. The sounds in the game and just some of the lore that you're finding around when you're playing. I don't know if you saw this one, but this one's stuck with me. Maybe because I haven't encountered creepier things yet, but there was a videotape that was like puppets talking to each other about, and it was just edited very weirdly, and it was so creepy to find that in the game. I felt like I was in a fever dream almost.
There's a bunch of those. As far as I remember, it's like because you know, like the oldest house and the Bureau of Control are trying to kind of hide paranormal events from the public.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think I found a folder that said that those puppet shows were invented to try and like do a sort of inception on kids, so that they would know how to recognize or handle like paranormal events. Or have it somewhere in their psyche that this was a thing.
Ooh.
So it's like this series of kids' TV.
Oh.
But I'm not sure if it ever aired or anything, but there's little creepy TVs are everywhere. I watched like 2 seconds of it and was like, nope.
So creepy.
Not watching that.
Looking forward to finding the rest of them and being able to
Whole
sleep.
Whole series. I have to say, though, the DLC, The Foundation, maybe it's just because of the difficulty setting, or maybe it's because, you know, the initial environment is so huge and sprawling and complex and labyrinthine that it's like you spend a lot of time running around lost, or I did at least, or kind of coming around in circles.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in The Foundation, it's because it's a DLC, it's much more concise in terms of the play area.
Right.
And the map is a lot clearer. It's a lot more spaced out, and it's just one floor.
Okay. Yeah.
The bottom floor of the oldest house, the foundation of the oldest house, and I found it to be like, it's like Control if they tidied it up.
Yeah.
And just made it much more kind of coherent what you were doing. And I actually think it's maybe the most fun I had with Control was the foundation.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely give that a shot. Getting lost in the game is one of the things that caused me to slow down on it because. Yeah, you don't know where you're going all the time. You go back to certain areas and then enemies spawn. And so I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this fight again. This was already so stressful the first time. Please. I'm just trying to figure out where to go.
I remember that phase where every room that you step into, you feel a little underpowered, and so you're kind of never safe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's something that I kind of look forward to, the parts in games where you have all of your powers and you have all of your ammunition, all your gun types, and you're kind of OP and like you can just kind of take out anything. And that point never came. I remember finishing Control and thinking, okay, I've done it. I've got like a nice fancy outfit. I'm going to just go through the game and polish off some bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And like the third room, just dead. It's just...
keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, no way to feel safe in that game. But aesthetically, I mean, just perfect.
At this point, I definitely feel better equipped than in the very beginning of the game. But yeah, definitely still don't feel safe. More often than not, going back to previous rooms and encountering enemies, maybe because I'm just not at too high of a level yet. It's more tedious than anything else. I guess depending on the enemy too. But
yeah,
I mean, it's in those, that genre of horror, creepy games that I can still stomach. I'm more invested in finding out what's going on in the story to the point that I will try to push through this scary thing that's happening. So I do enjoy that.
Yeah. And there's just something about that game. It's got a strange appeal.
Yeah.
There's something intriguing and weird and off about it that just, it's like something that you kind of can't stop looking at and you're not quite sure why.
That's a good description, yeah.
I'm eager for a sequel to see what happens.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Further in.
I want to play Alan Wake now also.
Right, I played half of that one. On a borrowed Xbox. If you have Xbox and Game Pass, I think you've got it, haven't you?
Maybe. Yeah, I should, I guess.
But I was amazed by how good that looked, considering it's like two generations ago.
Yeah.
And still looks good. It looks like comparable to Last of Us 1.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But I mean, Jesus, that one's creepy as hell as well. It's like dark and you have to, you have a torch and it runs out of batteries. Oof. And batteries is the collectible. And you have to shine the torch on these shadows that come out of the woods, and then you have to break their shield with your torchlight, and then you can shoot them. But sometimes there's a lot of them coming at you at once.
Yeah,
a little bit like Control. It's this kind of bursts of intense combat, and then just creepy shit. It's a good one.
I'll try it out. I hope it's the type of creepy shit I can stomach.
I'm gonna try and finish Alan Wake, and then I'm holding out on playing the second Control DLC. Because it relates to Alan Wake, and I want to finish Alan Wake first.
Okay.
But I mean, I only could play Alan Wake in daylight. And honestly, like, we have 3 or 4 hours of daylight in Iceland right now.
Oh, right. Oh, no.
Because it's so dark. So, there's not much time for Alan Wake right now. I think I'm going to wait for brighter times before I take that one on again.
I had not considered my daylight privilege here. Because
I miss daylight.
It's gotten dark so much earlier than normal, and I'd been complaining about that, because now by the time 5 o'clock rolls around, the sun is down and I'm ready to go to bed. But yeah, I'm so sorry. Now I appreciate the few hours I have.
Right, maybe I should play more Bean games and less Remedy stuff.
Yeah.
Any other honorables for you?
Yes, but this is an honorable mention because it's a game that I should play and haven't. And this is a game that you can actually talk about. Hades, right?
Right.
You have more to say about it than I do at this point.
But you're feeling like, I've got a few games that I feel like I should have played to have a kind of informed opinion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like Final Fantasy Remake, Ghost of Tsushima, and these other games that came in high on a lot of the lists.
Mm-hmm.
Played the demo of Final Fantasy Remake, and I'm not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, there's something that I'm not liking about it. It's just this kind of high fantasy game where you're like collecting all the crystals and opening all the chests, and everyone's very kind of anime, kind of over exaggerated emotions, and compared to the writing of some of the games that we've talked about, like Control, Last of Us 2, Kentucky Route Zero, it really does feel like watching a kid's show in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God, this happened. And then you're like, no. It's just this constant kind of, I don't know, it wasn't appealing to me. So I think I'm going to skip that one.
Okay.
Ghost of Tsushima, I'll play on sale. But Hades was the other one for me. It was like games that one must play in 2020.
Yeah.
Ghost of Tsushima. You've been feeling a bit of that pressure.
Yes, definitely. I was going to say Ghost of Tsushima. I guess I mentioned this before we started recording, but I have it and hadn't gotten around to playing it before for a talk. I'm hoping to try it out tonight for the first time. So I am excited by that. But Hades, I've watched other people play Hades. This looks like the type of game I would enjoy playing. But sometimes I see a game making the rounds and I bide my time. I have a sort of almost active resistance to playing something at the height of its popularity.
I know what you mean. I was contrarian kind of contrarian hype block sometimes.
Yeah. There's really no reason for it. And I know that I will play it and enjoy it eventually. I just haven't yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I bought this one because Adam from Switch Indie Fix runs a website, and we talk a lot, and I sometimes write for them. And he was going crazy about this game. He did like a podcast saying about how much he loved the Hades, and it was just everywhere on his social media. And it was like a kind of wave that went around.
Yeah.
And I'm a Supergiant fan, so I've played Transistor and loved it, and played a bit of Bastion, their first game. And so was kind of on board with Supergiant and curious to play all their games. But as we discussed earlier, like averse to roguelikes and to loop games and these kind of, I don't know, there's something about the kind of circular progression that just doesn't quite click right in my head. I like these strong narratives and a feeling of moving forward. And roguelikes are incrementally moving forward with the kind of greater skill across time. But I played this one, and I have to say they've really done a great job with that formula as someone that's not a fan of it. Like the way that when you die in a loop, you will emerge back at the base of Hades because you're an immortal and you didn't really die, and you're like, your character will give like a little witty quip like, ugh, the bone hydra bit me again. And you'll kind of go and talk to your dad, and like you get these kind of plot elements. So it's very like deftly woven into the fabric of the game. So it's got this kind of strong narrative. But then the actual gameplay of just going from being at the start of every run, just Zagreus with your weapon of choice, and that's it. And then getting the boons of the gods, which are random every time, and getting your the Daedalus hammer, which powers up your weapon in really unpredictable ways. And I really got into this gameplay.
Yeah.
So sometimes you'll start with the spear. Spear was my weapon of choice.
Yeah.
And it's just a little short-range stabby spear, and there's enemies all around you. But then if you get like a triple stab, it kind of covers a really broad fan of enemies. And then if you power it up with lightning from Zeus, then every time you hit someone, the lightning will bounce to someone else.
Yes.
And then you power it up again with like the waves of Poseidon. And so by the end of it, you're like destroying half the screen every time you hit the hit button. And it is so satisfying, just the unpredictability of how you will play, if you know what I mean, based on the kind of the random elements that come up make every run intensely different. Like sometimes your dash becomes your main weapon. Like if you dash and there's a Poseidon tidal wave, you don't even use the spear for some runs. You're just kind of dashing into everyone and doing this kind of close range carnage.
And
then other times,
I love
like
that.
Yeah, other times you kind of get power up where you can drop crystals that act as kind of laser sentries. So you're kind of blocking off parts of the map and kind of defending it.
And then other
times you're just really aggressive all in, like lightning attacks and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I bought this one out of curiosity, like Game of the Year curiosity. Kind of bounced a little bit, played 3 or 4 hours and was like, yeah, okay, that's Hades. But something about it called me back, and I ended up doing 50 hours getting through it, getting through a lot of story. Still a few things I would like
that.
To do. Yeah. But yeah, that one got me. I think Supergiant is just one of those safe developers, you know?
And then the art style again is like really, really attractive to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did a really good job with it. And I like the mythology also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
And the game, so.
Yeah, big fan of any game with Greek mythology. Played Assassin's Creed Odyssey last year and Hades.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I'd had a crash course in Greek gods.
Yeah.
And now like Immortals Phoenix Rising is on my Switch.
Oh.
So I might go once more into the Greek mythology this year.
Ooh, very nice.
The Ubisoft open world Breath of the Wild meets Greek mythology. Fun times.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, I'm really glad you brought up Hades because it was the constant number 6 on my top 5. And I was constantly mm-hmm. juggling it in and juggling it out. So it's nice to get a chance to talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I'm glad you got a chance to talk about it.
And sorry for just hogging all of that Hades time there.
Oh, do not be sorry. I mean, I don't have experience playing it. I can only talk about what I've seen. So have to lean on your perspective.
I will say, though, did you buy the Itch bundle for Racial Justice that came out last year?
I did, but, you know, I haven't had the chance to play a lot of the games that came out. I started with Night in the Woods. And didn't finish. And then there was this game, I think it was called Art School.
Yeah, which right, was with a Q.
Yeah, yeah. That was like a fun little...
I didn't know that was in there, actually.
Yeah, it was a fun, like, weird, colorful game. But no, I haven't had the time to really make the rounds.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because mm-hmm. the the third of the 4 Supergiant games, Pyre, is in that pack.
Oh.
And it just, you know, when it came out, everyone was like, Night in the Woods, A Short Hike, and a few other games that were at the top of the pile.
Yeah, yeah.
And Pyre wasn't really mentioned, but it was the last Supergiant game for me to play after Bastion, Transistor, and Hades.
Oh, well, so I'm definitely going to give that a try.
And it's stunningly good. I think it's my favorite Supergiant game. It's the one where they go mm-hmm. the most creative mm-hmm. with the... you know, they're always beautiful games and they always look fantastic, sound great, and they're always well voiced and well written. But Pyre is the one where they seem to have gone just on a walk with the gameplay style.
Ooh.
It's such a weird clash of visual novel and this kind of invented wizard sport, like mm-hmm. Like Harry Potter sport kind of thing. So you're playing mm-hmm. with a team of a witch and a dog mm-hmm. and like a giant monster. And you have to play against other teams that are just as weird as that. And I have to say, I think Pyre is the black sheep of the Supergiant family, but to me it's maybe their best game.
I mean, you say I'm on a team with a dog, you don't have to say more than that. I'm on board.
Yeah, Rookie Greentail, everyone's favourite doggy team member. So yeah, I mean, Supergiant for me, I think I'll just play everything they do from now. It's just 4 good games on the trot.
And that's good to know. Thank you for plugging that because now I'm going to add that to my list. I've just accrued such a backlog of games this mm-hmm. year. Somehow. I don't know. I felt like this is the most I've really extended myself in terms of what I would play in my free time.
Mm-hmm.
And still I'm finding that I'm just scratching the surface of everything that I have got to play. Mm-hmm. So,
do you kind of buy stuff on sale and throw it in the back for later?
Oh, or are you definitely kind of more focused? I do that.
Yeah,
I definitely do that.
Yeah, same.
So
it's getting ridiculous, really. I think my Switch is full, and I'm buying games that I don't have room for, and then not downloading them. And
just
saying one day.
I built a PC at the end of the year, and...
Is this how you managed to play Cyberpunk?
No. I bought Cyberpunk for the Xbox, actually. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't very nice-looking, mm-hmm. but also... I mean, I've played not nice-looking games before. you know, I'll play old games. Mm-hmm. So the graphics aren't really what determines whether or not I'll keep playing a game. But the story will, and it did not hit that for me. I honestly, just because I have it, I am going to give it another try and see if I can get pulled into it. But as it stands, no.
Yeah. Which path did you pick? Out of curiosity.
What was it? The
Street Kid.
Yeah, Corpo, I think that's what
it was. Nomad.
Yeah, Street Kid. I was about to say Cool Kid. I'd like to think. Yeah,
I picked the Cool Kid. Not even a choice, but I picked it.
I just maxed out my cool points.
Yeah, the only thing that made me curious about that game was the Nomad, because I like the idea of being in this dusty desert wasteland.
I haven't seen a lot of gameplay from the Nomad path, but I do like the idea of kind of a westernish feel in this very futuristic setting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should watch Westworld. Is that? I don't know.
Yeah, the first two seasons at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
So have you got anything you're excited to play on your rig?
Definitely do. I just got Far Cry 5, which I've heard good things about. And I got Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I'm a really big fan of that series, actually. Which is, it's funny to say, because I think anytime I bring up Tomb Raider in certain groups, Uncharted comes up, which I do not like. Probably, I have no attachment to Nathan Drake as a character.
Same. Really. Seems obnoxious from the outside.
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, it's unrealistic. I'm saying that and then, you know, going to play Tomb Raider after this. But I don't know, it feels a little more believable, Laura's character, but maybe it's a nostalgia thing, I don't know. But I do really enjoy that series.
Yeah, I played Tomb Raider 1. It's the reason I got an original PlayStation 1 back in the days.
Yeah.
I tried to get into these new ones. They're cinematic and really impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
But they haven't quite stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess what I will say about myself is that I do fall off of games pretty easily. So it's notable to me just when I finish a game. And so if I can do that for a certain franchise, then like I know that there is something there that draws me to this game, and it kind of remains in my realm of favorites. Yeah.
Are you going to be streaming some of that, or is that just one that you're looking forward to?
I'm going to try streaming some of it. You know, push the old CPU, see what it can handle.
Right.
And tonight I definitely think I'm going to break into Ghost of Tsushima. I've been really focused on programming for a while, and I haven't played anything, so I'm excited to try it out.
Are you going to stream that one, or are you just going to give it a spin?
I think I will actually stream a bit of it later on tonight. So if you're still up, you know, can come and hang out, but also no pressure, because it is what, 1 a.m. now on your end?
It is, but I live like a nighttime life at the moment anyway. I might well drop by. Was that all of your honorable mentions?
Yeah, actually it was.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for that. If people want to come and find you streaming and on Twitter and online, where can they find you?
Yes, I am at Girl with Box on Twitch and on Twitter, where I'm very vocal. I will be honest, I haven't nailed down a good schedule just now. So I stream very randomly these days, but I do tend to announce when I'm going live on Twitter. So that's a good place to follow me if you want to hang out, play some games.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time, Danny.
Thank you for your time. As always, it's wonderful getting to chat with you.
So thanks very much to Danny for joining me. Really enjoyed hearing about her games of the year. It's really nice to hear about how gaming can provide a sense of community and a sense of communication in the COVID year. And I think Danny's selection really, really proves how important and how useful gaming can be in bringing people together. And as much as I am a single player epic kind of fan myself and not much of a multiplayer gamer, I really enjoy hearing about that side of gaming, and my way of engaging with that is mostly through watching people like Danny on Twitch. So do go and drop her a follow, and maybe I'll see you in the chat sometime when she's streaming. So that's the show. Hope you enjoyed that one. I'll be back next week. I've got some plans for games that I'm going to cover. I'm going to do an episode soon about Spiritfarer, which I've been having a great time with, resource collecting and delivering souls to the afterlife. I've also played If Found and Year Walk. I've completed two games this year so far, those two for my one finish a week challenge this year. And I've also got Immortals Phoenix Rising on the slate. So after Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Hades last year, I still haven't had enough of playing in the realm of the Greek gods, so I'm looking forward to that one. I will have a special guest for that show, my good friend Sam, aka Clover underscore EXE. He's going to play Immortals as well, and we're going to come together and talk about that. So there's lots to look forward to this month. Hope you enjoyed the show. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, all as Gaming in the Wild. If you would like to support the show, then always very happy to see a new pledge appearing on Patreon. It's patreon.com/gaminginthewilds. And I also have that Ko-fi account that I discussed at the start there. So thanks very much for joining me. See you next week. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye for now.